Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome
to another weekly episode of Booker T. Washington Speaks, African American Family Room Forum. This is your host, Marshall Washington, Gavin Sabui, and I am the host and moderator. And I welcome everyone that's listening via the internet as well as our telephone guests. And we do have our regular panelists tonight. We're waiting for others to join, but I will go ahead and introduce our regular panelists, Mr. Pianchi. And how are you doing this evening, sir?
Oh, pretty good. Yourself?
Okay. Did you look up to see what the topic is for tonight? You usually are right on it, so did you check it out? Mr. Pianchi, did you check out to see what the topic is for tonight? You usually already have looked at it, so have you looked at it tonight?
No, I haven't looked at it. I just dial in and check and see what you got cooking.
Just go ahead. I can let you know what it is. I mean, you don't have to look. I got it right in front of me. I can tell you. But for the rest of our audience, I'll go ahead and share it. Our topic for tonight is this. In this day and time, this is October the 20th, 2018, in this day and time, why are white people, quote unquote white people, I don't like to call people white and black, but that's what some of them like to be called, so I'm just saying, why are white people prone to be so on edge around African Americans? Repeat that. In this day and time, this is October 20th, 2018, why are white people prone to be so on edge around African Americans? Now, there's several reasons why I picked that topic for tonight's discussion. And as I've mentioned many times on the show, usually every week I look at the news throughout the week. And what I'm looking for, among other things, is news that is significant in terms of things that are happening in the African-American community, things that are happening that really have a big effect on the African-American people. And so what I noticed in the news that was significant this week were several instances that were reported where African-Americans were targeted for what might be considered to be racial profiling. Of course, we know of the one soccer dad case where this lady who was a, I guess I'll just call her a sideline referee, just to use that term. I don't know what her official job title was, but she was supposed to patrol the sidelines and make sure that the fans, parents, and friends of the players weren't abusing the referees and even going out on the field to get into arguments about the game. And of course, the issue was that she confronted this African-American man whose son was playing, who was giving instructions to his son. And they got into a discussion, and she called the sheriff's department, and the sheriff had to come and mediate. And they finally, you know, let the man go about his business, but he was shaken because of the situation. And later he was on national TV, and he had actually tears coming down his cheek because he couldn't understand why he was treated like that, just to be a soccer dad, so to speak. The other case, of course, was the lady who saw this gentleman in her apartment building, and she had apparently left the door cracked so she could get back in the apartment building. I don't know if she decided not to take the apartment fob or whatever outside with her, but anyway, she saw this gentleman go into the building, and she confronted him, wanting to know was he supposed to be in the building, and he said yes, he was a resident, but she didn't believe him and apparently decided to follow him throughout the building until he got to his apartment. She still was wanting to engage him in somewhat of a, I won't say hostile, but at least a suspicious type of conversation. And then the last one, of course, was the situation about the little 9-year-old boy who was with his mom, and the boy had a heavily filled backpack on his back. And So his mom was behind him, but as he passed by this woman, this white woman who was bending over, the backpack brushed her on her backside, and she immediately felt that the boy apparently had touched her, and she threatened, and she actually did call the police and said the boy had sexually assaulted her, which was totally untrue. And she apologized, you know, when she saw the video, the security camera tape. But the fact of it is that I was in a meeting. I was in a civic association meeting, not civic association, but a civic service club. I won't mention the name of the organization. Yesterday morning, a breakfast meeting, and the majority of the participants in the meeting were European Americans. I prefer to use that term rather than say white people. There were two African Americans, myself and another one, and there were several other people there that were white people. And so one of the members of the group said to the other African American, not to me, but the other African American, that he needed to change his color. He was joking, actually. He didn't mean any harm, you know, to prevent from actually having something like these other incidents happen to him. And the other guy just was placid. He didn't say anything. He was just, you know, being really cool. But then another one of the members of the breakfast group said that he didn't say white people, but I took it to mean, you know, the white people. He said, well, the people are on edge. And so that's the reason why I chose this topic for tonight. In this day and time, why are white people prone to be so on edge around African Americans? They might be the other way around, but the incidents that were in the news were about the white people apparently being on edge about the black people. So I didn't mean to take so long to explain it, but for the benefit of those who are listening via the internet, I want to make sure that you understood what the discussion topic is. So, Mr. Pianca, you're the only one that's joined us so far. There was somebody that came on momentarily and dropped off. But what do you think about that?
Well, the one with the backpack, that was probably overreaction. The other one with the soccer, I can't comment on that. I don't know what was going on there. The other one with the apartment, I can understand that one because I know that area in St. Louis. And the guy should have showed the woman his whatever it was that he was supposed to have had to enter inside of the past the security door. In that area, that's on 13th Street, just south of Washington, you've had a lot of incidents in downtown St. Louis. Carjackings, shootings, running pedestrians down, and people. If I travel down there, I'm traveling armed. I wouldn't go down there. Let's try to stay from that area anyway. It's been like that for a long time. Haven't been any, what would you call it? It hadn't been any nightlife in downtown St. Louis in a long time. They tried to do some things, but just didn't work out. But I think the one in that case there, that the guy should just went on and showed the woman his key and went on about his business.
So let me just interject, because we do have another guest that just came on. And so I want to just interject something. And then if you want to continue, then that'll be fine. And if you want to turn it over to the other guests, that'll be fine. But just to make sure I understand what you're inferring, are you inferring that maybe the person who considered himself to be treated inappropriately, the black person probably reacted wrong by getting upset because he was being questioned?
Yeah, I think he should have went on and showed her his entry key that he would have used if the door wasn't blocked. You know, some folks, the lady shouldn't have blocked the door. She should have let it shut. But, you know, there's been many cases when people stand around when somebody go in the door, and before the door closed, they run in, and, you know, all sorts of things have been known to happen. Break-ins in apartments and so on. We had a girl out in Jennings, Missouri. Well, Jennings is where Darren Wilson came from. Her door was, I don't know if her door was kicked in, or she opened the door, somebody came in and killed her, a young lady. Downtown St. Louis, you had carjackings. Solo, a gentleman that worked for a foundation, his son was killed through a carjacking. So, and if you go to St. Louis Post-Dispatch newspaper and look at their homicide map, and you could look at all the incidents that have occurred around that particular area, around 12th Street, 13th Street, and also just south of there, which is the ballpark, Busch Stadium.
Okay, well, that's good information. If you hadn't been on to discuss that, I wouldn't have had a full picture that actually gives me a clear understanding of her motivation for taking that action. So that's good. I appreciate that information. I'm not sure about it, but I do believe that he actually went inside and she was still standing at the door confronting him, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was taking a picture of her presence there, just to have the documentation that she was continuing to not trust that he should have even been in that apartment when he did use the fob or whatever, the key card or whatever they used to get in. But I appreciate that. Did you want to add anything else? If you don't, I'm going to let our other guests come on and say what's on their mind.
No, you can bring on your other guest.
Okay. All right. This will be a general conversation here. Just by you know, welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks, African American Family Room Forum. We're certainly glad to have you on tonight. And I would like to just go ahead, for the benefit of anyone else that's tuned in via the internet, to reiterate the topic for tonight. The topic is, in this day and time, which is, this is October 20th, 2018, why are white people prone to be so on edge around African Americans? That's the question. So what are your thoughts on that subject?
Oh, well, good evening, everybody. Mr. Keontae,
good
nice
evening.
To hear your voice this evening.
Thank you.
I think that they're on edge because they're fearful that African American people of slave descent are going to remember all the terrible things that they've done to us in the past and maybe think that we're going to retaliate against them. And that's not going to happen because I don't think the majority of people would feel that way. I think that African-American people have forgiven the past because the people who are here now, they're not responsible for what their ancestors did. And most of the people that I associate with, or Detroit, occasionally come across young people who are very militant or want to be militant. They don't really know what militant is. And, you know, they have hostile feelings. It's because somebody is trying to incite, I think, a race riot, or I personally think that the government is trying to create martial law so that they can call out the military. I think that's one of the reasons why they've equipped all of these police stations all over the country with military equipment. So in case they do declare martial law, they're just going to send in the National Guard or whoever they need. And the thing is that the police departments have all this military equipment, but they haven't been trained how to use it. And but that's what I personally, I feel that they're afraid because they everybody knows what has that, what horrible things happened in the past to African American people by European American their descendants. They use babies for alligator bait down in Florida. I mean, stuff is still happening to us. But we're human beings, and we're going through some kind of purification right now. I mean, we're no longer in the age of Pisces. We're in the age of Aquarius now. So we're going through a paradigm shift globally. And, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, when people say that God created us in his image, he created the male and the female. And I don't think that the creator is either masculine or feminine. And right now, I think that the divine masculine was ruling, but now the divine feminine is being restored. And once the divine feminine, this is my thinking, okay, is restored, which is why you have so many women going into business and politics, and we want equal rights that men have. We want to be able to, we never really had full equal rights as equals as minds with men. And so we're going through a paradigm shift now, and the divine feminine is being restored. So we're going to have the, instead of his story, we're going to have her story. So we're going through a whole lot of changes as human beings right now. In the universe, it's on a universal level. It's global, or some people don't believe that this is a globe that we live on. Some people believe that we live on a flat earth. But this is what I'm thinking, that they're afraid that, you know, remember that you tarred and feathered people, you electrocuted a 14-year-old boy, you hung 5-year-old little girls, you did terrible things. You didn't even treat us like we were human beings. You denied us our human rights. You denied a creature of God their right to be human. You still got it listed in the Constitution, 3/5 of a human being, which is not correct. We need to fix that. But then that's a whole other story. But that's what I'm thinking, that they're afraid. These people, our ancestors treated these people so terrible. They're gonna rise up and they're going to do something terrible to us. They're going to remember that. Those Mandingo movies where you boil black people in the pot because they had a relationship with a white woman or had a baby, or the white woman got pregnant for the black man and they let the baby bleed to death, and all kinds of crazy stuff happens, you know, and it's a lot of crazy stuff still happening, and they realize that. So, I mean, it's not going to, you can't put a Band-Aid on it and fix it overnight or put some kind of salve on this. It's a healing process that we're going through right now. And the only way we're going to heal is we're going to have interfaith dialogue. We're going to have communications among all races, not just African-Americans, because everything African-Americans do, the whole world copies us. Slapping thighs, people wearing their pants around the bus, rappers all over the world now. Everybody want to be a rapper because we are great people. We belong to the Creator. And the Creator is going to deal with this. We can't. There's no way you can repay somebody all the atrocities, the ma'afa is called, the unspeakable horrors that were committed against us. We don't have anything to do with that. That's why all these terrible things are happening in the world now, because the world itself is going through a purification. Human beings are going through purification to make us better human beings. And the Honorable Imam Wardi Muhammad, Allah be pleased with him, he said that if you want to see the spiritual growth and development of human beings, go to the cities, and you can see how far we have grown. And if people are spiritually dead, how can they possibly be physically alive and doing things, cooperating with each other? He said he created us so that we can know each other. We have all these different kinds of people in the world so that we can know each other. We're all human beings. We all bleed the same. If you cut me, I see you see some white meat. If you cut me deep enough, you're going to be white. I'm going to bleed. But nobody's thinking about doing anything to harm European Americans for all the terrible stuff they did. They're doing enough stuff to themselves. That's why they're trying to get put Kavanaugh, the reason why they really wanted to put Kavanaugh in that position on the Supreme Court is so they can try and reverse Roe versus Wade, because 60 out of 100% of the people in America, 60% of the women who have abortions in America are European American. And they want to stop that because they're not reproducing. They're disappearing from the face of this earth. Color America brown. America's going to be brown, and they know that. But they're trying to stop these young ladies from having abortions. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. They're feeling threatened. I mean, they feel threatened that their whole race is going to disappear. And it is going to disappear. But look at all the people that they have caused to disappear from the face of this earth. They're indigenous Americans that will never know who they were or what language they spoke, what complexion they were. Nothing about their culture. This wipes them completely off the planet. We don't have any control over what's going to happen to them. We don't even have control over what's going to happen to us. There's a creator that created this universe. So that's my feeling about that. If they're feeling that way, I have Caucasian friends. They don't feel like that. But the people who are supremacist minded, that's what I'm going to say that. You have black supremacists out there, white supremacists out there, Italian supremacists out there, Jewish supremacists, Zionists out there. You got all these supremacist mind thinking people who think that because whoever they are, they're superior to somebody else. Nobody's superior to anybody unless they're close to the Creator, because we're all the same. I believe that we're all created as one soul. And that one soul was Adam. And within that one soul, you got all these other different souls, which includes us. And eventually, the whole universe is going to be gone. And it's expanding. I mean, we're not going to be here forever. We'll be gone soon. And these people will come. The millennials are very angry. They want to know why they got to work so hard and they still broke. They working and they broke. They don't like that. They don't like what the older generations have left for them not to do. They don't even want to think, period. None of them. The black ones, the white ones, that's why they want all this TV, radio, internet, whatever, cell phone. They want distraction all the time because they told me it hurts to think about what they got to deal with. That my generation, not me per se, but people who have been in control of this planet, are leaving behind for them to have to deal with. Plastic in the water worldwide. You have microscopic plastic in the water. Think about that. And the millennials, they're the people that have to deal with it. And there are more of them right now on the planet than anybody. And if all of them go out there and vote next month, hey, they can put anybody in they want to put in. And they already told the people down in Florida they were going to take care of them in the fall anyway about that gun violence that was going on in the schools down there. So, I mean, you know, it's a whole lot of stuff going on. But the people who are feeling fearful and threatened, those are the supremacist-minded people. That's who that is. I'm the God. I'm the God. I'm walking around here. You deceive the whole world into thinking that you put a white man on a cross with blonde hair and blue eyes, and you told the whole world this person is born from divine birth. Jesus, Son of God. You lied. Jesus ain't never told nobody he was God's son. He told him he was the S-U-N, the light of God, but he never told anybody he was the S-O-N of God. So, but the devil was allowed to deceive the whole planet, and he did. And so everybody wants to be, everybody wants to be like the white folks. Now they don't want to be like the white folks because they see them for what they really are. Not all of them, but I'm going to tell you again, the supremacist-minded people, those people who are worshiping graven images. And you go up in the church or whatever, we got all kind of idols going on. And the Ten Commandments clearly tell the people, God said, do not worship any graven images. And you're worshiping, you got a Mary, you got the rosary beads, you got all this crazy stuff going on. And these young children, these millennial people, they are wide awake. They don't care about no black or white. They see each other as human beings. And then you got the LGBT transgender people coming up, and now you got some more people out there. Now they're from a transgender parents. They're calling themselves binaries. They're a little bit of male and a little bit of female. So maybe God is evolving us to be hermaphrodites or something of some type. I don't know. All I see that we're in some kind of paradigm shift, and something old is going out and something new is coming in. And the millennials are letting everybody know they're changing things. whether we like it or not, it's going to be another world. The world as we knew it is gone, and they're bringing in a new world. And if you don't like what they're doing, oh, well, they really don't care, because they're looking at all this terrible stuff that's left behind, pollution in the water, the red tide down in Florida, the global warming, the oil spills in the ocean, and everything's contaminated. And you leaving this to me? And you're talking about what you don't want and what you don't like about me wearing my pants and wearing my butt, or I'm doing all these opioids? They don't even want to think. And I can't blame them. And when they see their parents talking about being racist and the black person this and the black, they don't care. Or the Chinese that or this one. They don't think like that. That's how old school people thinking like that. From the Pisces age, we're in the age of Aquarius. And everybody better wake up and realize that we're in a paradigm shift here. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, actually, I want to say that two things. Number one is, in my history, college history classes, I have a majority of white students. Some are millennial age. Some are the what I would say, what is it called, Generation X. Some are much older. Some are in their 40s, people who have gone back to school or coming back to school after going out and having responsibility as heads of families or working to support families. And now they've got a little break where they can come back to college and earn the degree they wanted to get. So I've got a varying range. But I find with my students, as I teach American history, and I do teach about slavery, I don't teach the whole course about slavery, but I do make sure the students understand that that was a very integral part of American history up until 1865, and then a quasi form of slavery even up until the present time, if you look at the contract prison program. But not speaking about that, but speaking about the program that they had in the South, a peonage program with the sharecroppers that were bound by slave-like contracts all the way up until the 1960s. And I've seen one of these types of contracts. But the fact of it is that a lot of the white students, I would say most of them, have no knowledge about that history. I mean, in those schools that are predominantly white, they don't teach that history about what those white people did during the slavery years to black people. And in a lot of the predominantly African-American schools, they're pulling that kind of information out of the curriculum. And so there are a lot of people, older people like us. I'm not saying you're old, but I know I am kind of old, 75. But fact is that most of the younger people don't know anything about that. But in general, for some reason or another, you could say it's something that's innate or genetic, but I don't know if that's psychologically sound. To be able to say that there's something in the genes of these young people that makes them feel that there's some retaliation over the hill around the corner. But the fact is that I got this idea from a friend of mine, a white friend of mine that I was in a breakfast meeting with yesterday. We belong to the same civic organization, and when a question came up, you hadn't come on yet, Spina, but a question, an issue came up in the meeting where one of the members, a white member, looked toward the other black person. There were just two African Americans that were in the group in the meeting, and this white person looked next to him to this black person, not me, but another person, and said, "You need to change it." He was joking. He said, "You need to change your color," so basically he wouldn't get hostile reaction from a white person as he went about his business. He was referring to some of the incidents that have happened in the last few days or weeks. Another one of the members said that people, and I took it, he didn't say it, but I took it to mean white people, are on edge. Now, he's not a millennial. He's got a daughter in college. So he's in his mid-40s, I guess. So he's probably aware of that history growing up down here in Georgia. But the fact is that his relationship with me for the last 5 years that I've known him has always been, you know, a very positive, equanimous, very welcoming relationship. But he still probably reflects with some of the people that he knows feel that they are on edge. And maybe they might be on edge because they know from seeing it, maybe the history they learned, or maybe actually seeing mistreatment of black people, that there may be some justification if black people did retaliate. But I know for a fact that it's apparent a lot of people, white people, are edgy when they are around black people. And I get edgy myself driving through certain neighborhoods. But that wasn't the kind of, let me finish. That wasn't the kind of person that was being represented in the news, not the kind of people that would, you know, hijack your car or break into your house, the kind of people that were profiled, if you don't mind me using that word, in the recent news, or, you know, a soccer dad whose child is biracial, and obviously this person probably lives in a neighborhood that's predominantly white because, you know, looking at the people that were out there on that soccer field, you know, this wasn't the ghetto type of neighborhood. The young man who had the lady follow him to his apartment. Now, Mr. Pianca said that's not really a good neighborhood, but the apartment seemed to be, you know, a upper scale type of residential place. So even though it might have been in what may be considered to be a low end type of general neighborhood, that particular place wasn't low end at all.
The neighborhood, downtown St. Louis, is what you have people coming into that area that's committing these crimes, right? You know, they're at 13th and Washington, just about five blocks over from there at the Domino Pizza. You had a gentleman killed, according to this homicide maps, just in June, 6/25, you had a killing where you found Freddie Mac, 37, 1100 block of St. Louis Avenue, dead about 5:15 p.m. That's in the afternoon. Then if you go over from there, over on about two blocks away from there on East 14th Street, which is, and this apartment is on North 13th Street, which is about a half mile from where this shooting occurred July the 5th. Where three people in a Toyota Camry got in an argument. As they were leading off, they shot into a grocery store, killing a clerk. Didn't have nothing to do with it. So it's these incidents that go on that makes everybody.
Well, you know what, Mr. Chianti, can I say something? I observe things. I'm a fine artist by a profession and an educator. And I've been observing that when incidents happen in the African-American neighborhood, it's magnified. But when incidents happen in European-American neighborhoods, it's not magnified. Okay? And anybody can go into a rage, and people do go into rages. But like I said, we're going through some kind of paradigm shift or something now. And it's even happening more frequently now. Even here where I live in Augusta, 1 week we had, I don't know, 7 or 8 people got killed at one time. I don't know. It's just crazy. Even out in Columbia County, a couple of years ago, this man just lost his mind and went through the neighborhood just killing up people. Okay? So we don't know. American people need to understand one thing, first of all. Other people outside of America are looking at us. They hear your accent. When they hear that American accent, they don't care if you're black or white or whatever. All they know, you're an American, okay? European Americans have been privileged for so long that they don't even realize how privileged they have been. And I think that some people are starting to realize, look, we have been so privileged that they're in their own little, they don't have to get up in the morning and worry about if they go out and get in their car and take a drive, if the police are going to pull them over, profile them or anything like that. And I want to just say this also, New York, someone in New York is getting ready right now to get a law passed so that when people call police on African-Americans, it is going to be considered a hate crime. And I'm all behind that 100%. Well, just like that man, the boy went to his door, knocked on the door to ask for directions. He came out that door and shot after this boy. I don't know if that was here, email, what's up, you know, I don't know where it was. He shot after the boy. He was trying to kill this child. And then he tried to tell the police when the boy got away. Had the boy not gotten away, he tried to say that the boy was coming towards him or something. But the video recorded everything. So a lot of stuff that these people have been getting away with, they can no longer get away with.
We've had the same thing happen here for a black mother.
And then another thing I have observed on the news, this is something that happens. If an incident happens that involves African-American people, they will say the person was African-American. If it involves European-Americans, pay attention. They will never say it was a European-American. Very rarely do you hear them say that.
Well, it's because people self-identify.
What is that all about? So,
That's because people self-identify.
Are you fearful? Well, I think you are. You did say you were fearful to go into the neighborhood with not being armed into certain areas. You feel like you have to be armed. I did hear you say that before I came on. Just what I was coming on. So
yeah, but can I say
something? Sure.
What I was saying, you've had incidents where a black mother shot out of her door and killed a kid on the sidewalk also here in St. Louis. And as I said before, if you look at this map, this homicide map on the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and you see these circles, you know, the red for shooting, the brown for unspecified homicide, and you look where the clusters of red circles are, they aren't in the white areas. They're in what's considered, you know, North City or North County or over in the East St. Louis, Illinois area. And whatever the reason that they are happening, they are happening. I mean, you have to call them for what they are.
Yeah.
Now, we just
I'm still trying to figure out who dropped all those weapons in Chicago. The gangs out there say somebody just dumped a whole bunch of weapons out there for them. Because it goes back to like what I was saying before. Somebody's trying to start civil unrest so that they can declare martial law. And
well, I don't know about all this.
All over the country for whatever reason. And maybe it's those people who are fearful. And that's why they got so many FEMA camps set up all around to incarcerate people when they can't control the crowds. Because maybe they know something that we don't know. My understanding is that we're getting ready to have a depression that was worse than the 1930s. Or those economies doing well right now. Who knows what's going to be happening in a few days? Anything can happen. So if we go into a depression or a recession, because it's still the same thing, and people got their money in the bank, and then all of a sudden, bam, we're in a recession, and there's no money in the bank, then what do you think the people are going to do? They're going to come out in the street, and they're going to do what? They're going to mess.
Well, I was going to say that we have a safety director here in the city of St. Louis. His name is Judge Edwards, and he's recommending Judge Jimmy Edwards. he's a director of public safety, and he's recommending that anyone that's committed a violent crime, a gun crime, that their minimum sentence is 15 years, 15 to 25 years.
Okay. I don't think that's going to help anything by locking people up all the time. I think that we cage people
up
like
that. Well,
one
of the things that people complain about is that people that commit these crimes like that, they let right back out on the street.
They do.
And so he's saying that the minimum is 15 years, even talking about 25 years. And he's a very highly respected person in that city.
Yep.
So
I don't know.
You have to do
what
you got to do.
I don't know what the solution is going to be.
So let me just interject something. I personally don't think that taking these people out of the community and putting them in prison camps, because that's what you're talking about, work camps, is really going to solve the problem for the simple reason that they are still going to have an influence on the community because people are going to be visiting them unless they just completely put them in some type of isolation where they can't even have visitors during the whole time that they're incarcerated, and that would be pretty draconian.
Well,
and,
you know what, Mr. Washington? What about the people who are the victims, the family, the mother, the father, the sisters and brothers of these individuals, like I gave you those two cases, and there's more, of individuals that was killed by these heinous actions that these people take? You know, you got people, you have groups that's hollering about you're locking them up for too long. Well, all the attention is on those voices. How about the voices of the victim's relatives who are left without a loved one? No one asked them, do they think that the perpetrator is locked up long enough?
Yeah, I just want to say this. Let me just say something right quick. I don't believe this concept of jailing people is the answer to dealing with crime. See, fortunately, you know, we don't have summary executions for minor crimes. But the fact is that somehow or another, I don't know when it began. I haven't looked into that. That'd be a nice project for me to research. Is when did this whole concept of jailing people become the society's response to crime? Now, I do know, and I'm not trying to promote this, but I do know that in the early years of the Islamic culture, jails weren't even part of the equation. There's nothing in the Quran that says anything about putting people in jail, per se. There's one reference to confining women if they're guilty of indecency, but that's not supposed to be a permanent situation. But the fact is that when people stole, they had the punishment of having a hand cut off. That cut out a lot of stealing. That's pretty harsh and draconian. I wouldn't want to even be in a situation to know that somebody I knew got their hand cut off, but they cut out that stealing. This thing about violent crimes, you know, like somebody shooting somebody. But under Quranic law, if you kill my cousin, my brother, even my close friend, then under the law, I'm not saying vigilante justice, but under the law, I had, you know, the right to retaliate against you, an eye for an eye type of thing. But there weren't any jails. But now we have this, for the last several hundred years, this concept that the answer to dealing with crime is to lock people up. And all you do is create a whole nest of hardened criminals who some of them eventually will get out. But as I was beginning to say, and I'm going to be finished in just a second, that these people have relatives, they have children, male and female children. They have other close relatives who come, and they leave there because of what they see happening to their loved one with a certain bitterness that may cause them maybe not to do the crimes that their loved one did, but to have an antisocial attitude. And so that's going to affect the society. So I think all this jailing is just making society more of a hostile type of place overall. That's my point.
I would just like to say that you and I and Mr. Keontae, I'm sure you as well, we grew up in an America that everybody looked out for each other's children and neighborhood. You didn't have to lock your doors or your windows or your cars. When you went to school, you didn't start the school day out without someone doing a prayer or reciting a Bible verse or something. But what my point is that everyone knew that you had to answer to a higher authority, and people had a respect for the Creator. Now we live in a society where people do not even talk to their children about the Creator. They don't even know what the Creator is themselves. They don't have a relationship like that with a higher being. So I think America needs a moral rebirth. And I think that when they took the prayers out of the school, that was the beginning of the downfall for spiritual growth and development for human beings in America. We have lost respect for human life. When I was growing up, there was very rarely people got pregnant, and they only had prophylactics or something for people to use to have sex with for birth control. There was no birth control pills or no birth control. Girls would have abortions and people died, whatever. But now we have all this birth control, and you have people having more babies than ever. And it's simply because nobody's teaching them what's morally correct and what's not morally correct. And our society is so decadent, so immoral now. We keep giving rights for this and rights for that. You know, people have taken the civil rights movement and they're using it in an immoral way. They're using all the struggles of the African Americans to acquire civil rights in other ways that don't have anything to do with. So everybody wants civil rights. So I'm waiting for the pedophiles to say they want the right to have sex with people's children. I'm waiting for these, like, I think you were talking about this before, Mr. Keontae. I'm waiting for those people to come up and say, I want to have sex with animals openly. The LGBT is not going to just stop there. It's going to, there's so many subcultures out there. You got people who are involved with plastic animals because that's how unnatural people have become. The farther away people get away from the concept that there is a Creator who rules over everything and no one's teaching anybody anything about, we all have to answer to a higher being. You got teachers having sex with the children in school now because they don't even feel like they have to answer to a higher authority. They should care less. I mean, and we need a moral rebirth in America. That's what we need. Because I miss living in a neighborhood where I don't have to lock my door, which I don't lock my door now sometimes. I forget or whatever. Maybe leave the keys in the door and let me sleep at night. But you can't do that anymore because people are on all kinds of drugs, mentally ill people. They closed all the mental hospitals. And I think they closed the mental hospitals so that they can lock people up. I understand that the privatized people who own the prison systems now are getting ready to start suing the state and the federal government for not keeping their prisons full. Why is it the state's responsibility to keep the prisons full for you and the government's responsibility to keep the prisons full for you? So they're getting ready to start suing people. This country's just gone mad. It's just totally insane now. We need a moral rebirth in this country. I guess people are afraid and scared. They need to be scared of everybody, not just black people, because over in South Carolina, there were some people who were cannibals. prisoners. They release them back into society. And we have all these serial killers. I mean, this people come to America, they want to come to America, but they don't know what America's infrastructure is dealing with. We're dealing with a whole lot of stuff at one time. And we don't, we're trying to figure out. My brother told me the other day, he feels like he's losing his mind. I said, well, join the club. I think everybody's feeling like that. Like, what is getting ready to happen next? What is going to happen next? You don't even know. So I guess people are fearful. And then I saw today where California is going around collecting guns now again and giving people skateboards and gift cards and something to collect the guns. Then you got African-American people saying, oh, well, now they come in to take the guns from us again, so we won't have any way to defend ourselves. But the millennials are like, they don't want any guns at all. So we have all this stuff going on in the upheaval, and it's going to come to a head after a while. And where are we going, and what's going to be the outcome? We don't know that yet. So all we're doing is just discussing it, but we don't know what the outcome is going to be because we are in a paradigm shift on all levels, on all levels. I see it. It's deep. It's scary. It is very scary. And the thing about millennial people, they cannot tolerate any form of criticism, not constructive or any other kind. And even if they hear you talking to somebody, they think you're talking about them, and they might lose their mind. So they're just, I don't know, incensed or something. I don't know what that is, but there are more of them than there are of us, so we got to deal with that. So I don't know what the solution is to what's going on, but I don't think it's so much it's not a black-white issue anymore, people. It's not that. This is a spiritual battle going on. So if anybody's feeling fearful, it's on a spiritual plane. And every day I look at TV, there's all these interracial couples and things and children. And, I mean, America really is a melting pot. And that's why everybody wants to come here, because even with all the issues and problems that we have going on here, we're still the best thing going on this planet. We're still the best thing going. And I think that's because we say in God we trust, and we do. And I love America, and I love the American people. We just need to have better communications. That's all I think we need. We need better communications to find out what everybody's thinking. And we're so busy with our own lives and what's going on in our own lives that we don't even have time to sit down and talk with somebody. You go to the doctor's office, people are sitting here with their cell phone, no conversation with each other anymore. They don't even want to talk. That's not natural. That's not a natural thing to come into another person's presence and not even speak and say, how are you today? Or introduce yourself to someone. That's a society that I grew up in. Everybody was friendly. Everybody was family-oriented. If you got in trouble with the neighbors, you know you were in big trouble with your parents. If you got in trouble at school, you know you were going to be in trouble when you got home. You didn't get in trouble. You didn't want to get in trouble because you didn't want to have to deal with the consequences. But now, these people have no respect for nobody and nothing, even the little children, the little tiny ones. They don't have any respect for anybody. They're demanding their rights, too, and they're not playing. And they're coming after the millennials. I don't know. But anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're going to wrap up. I decided to make the show tonight just for 1 hour, but we want to give Ms. Bianca an opportunity. If you want to make a closing comment, we certainly welcome it. And then after that, we're going to play our closing anthem that we usually play at the end of the show. So, Ms. Bianca, would you like to make a closing comment?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Well, thank you for everything. We appreciate everyone that joined us tonight via the global internet to listen. We appreciate our panelists that were on tonight. And we look forward to being together on next Saturday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So thank you. God bless you and good night.